We're back live on the Big Talker FM. This is the Morning Beat. I'm Curtis Wright. And on the phone with us from Washington is Senator Richard Burr. We sure do appreciate, Senator, you taking the time this morning.
Curtis, good morning and greetings from Washington.
And it's great to talk to you again. And as I said, thank you for taking the time. There's been a, I know that we tried to fit you on, a few weeks ago, and we apologize for that. And I know you wanted to talk about the post-election, and I want to give you an opportunity about giving us your perspective on the post-elections and the results of new leadership now, and also new leadership for the Republican Party in the Senate.
Well, you know, Curtis, sometimes in life you get exactly what you deserve. And I think maybe that's what the election result was. We didn't fulfill every commitment we made to the country, and I think they chose to exercise that in a way that changed the majority and the minority. Doesn't disappoint me. I mean, I would love to be in the majority. I know exactly what my responsibilities are. I'll continue to do those. I'll do them on behalf of North Carolina. It may be a little bit tougher on some things. There may be some things that I have a little more legislative influence with now. But, you know, this is the hand we're dealt, and we're going to play it.
Now, I mean, there is a, you know, with the change of leadership now and the shoe, so to speak, being on the other foot, do you think this will be an obstructionist period during the next 2 years, or do you think everybody, even with the change of leadership, realizes there's a lot to accomplish in the next 2 years?
Well, I think clearly you've got a scenario that would allow this to be a non-productive two-year period. But I think it's really up to individual senators to move legislation forward to try to build the coalitions that you need. You know, Curtis, the rules in the Senate don't allow it to function unless there's bipartisan cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not in any different situation than the normal process of the United States Senate. There may just be one party that has the responsibility of chairing the Senate every day that's changed. So I'm not sure that the opportunity is any less. I will tell you that the challenge is just as great from a standpoint of how you get legislation passed.
Now, of course, you know, the day after, within 24 hours, I believe, Robert Gates was announced that Secretary Rumsfeld would step aside, and now Robert Gates has come in. I think he was just approved last evening, was he not?
It was passed on almost a unanimous vote in the Senate last night at 5 o'clock, and I think this clearly is a decision that was in the works at the White House for weeks, if not several months, going up to the election. The president made the decision to make a change. I think it's reflective of the tempo of the war and the fact that it has not gone like we projected.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I came back from Iraq in early September, and I said what I saw was that we had a window of 90 days to make some significant changes. Well, you know, Curtis, that was 90 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So many things that come out in the report yesterday from the Iraq Working Group are not a surprise to me, and I think that we will pay particular attention to it and work with the administration, with the military, with the State Department to make the adjustments that are necessary.
And, you know, I've looked at the report, and I certainly don't know anywhere near as much as you do about the report. But the one thing that stuck out for me was the statement that we also need to understand that we need to come together as a country on this. And now that we've got the report, now we've got these suggestions and recommendations. And I guess I'm asking you, I'm an optimist. I believe that we can come together. I guess the question for you is, do you believe that we will come together?
Well, knowing Lee Hamilton, who is a good friend and who co-chaired that with Secretary Baker, this was Lee Hamilton's way of saying, guys, the election's over. We need to look at this purely from a policy standpoint, purely from a standpoint of what's in the best interest of this country and stability around the world. Forget the last election cycle. And I think if we can do that, we can have that consensus that we need in Congress. And if we display that type of consensus, the American people will display it as well, I think.
Yeah, and I guess that's my optimism kind of feels that we have a tremendous opportunity. If we put the partisanship aside, we actually have a tremendous opportunity now to accomplish a lot of things in the next 2 years.
Oh, we did. And, you know, I had a conversation last week when we were out with Joe Lieberman, and I said, Joe, you have a unique opportunity being the independent that won in the last election cycle to set a pace of bipartisanship and independence, and let's see how many people follow.
I've got some callers on hold. Can we take some calls before
Absolutely.
We go on to some other issues? And I know you've got some important legislation you want to talk about today, some success there. Caller, you're live on the Morning Beat with Senator Burr. Do you have a question for him?
Yes, sir, and I thank you for, Mr. Burr, for you taking your time to respond to us.
Yes,
I listened to that report last night, and I just my questions to you are, I was very concerned with it. It seems like it's a fallback, turn over the country, let Iran and Syria come in and other countries come in that are known to be terrorist countries, and basically we're supporting the chaos that's been going there for the last year. And I wonder why our government has just turned this into a police military where, I mean, all these people getting killed are just basically standing on the side of the roads policing stuff over there. And we gave up the offensive attack that we had, the edge that we had 2 years ago. I mean, it just seems like we're just giving up, and we're just going to turn this back over to Iraq and let other countries that wanted to create this chaos give support and help over there. And
let's go from there and let the senator respond to that. Senator? The senator needs to call us back. We lost him there. We'll give him a second. He'll call us right back, and we'll talk about that. And we've got other callers on hold. Stay with us. He'll be calling us back right back. Sorry about that. We've got that phone problem. But anyway, we want to talk about the report that came out yesterday. I guess the question from the caller is, are we giving up? Is this a report of giving up and going on or not? And the senator's back here. Senator, I'm sorry. We apologize for that.
Oh.
We're having some phone problems. I guess the question was, do you view this report as we're giving up and we're going to give in and sort of bring so-called terrorist countries to the table?
Curtis, to the caller's point, I don't want to give anybody the impression that Congress is going to embrace 100% of this report. We're going to go through it in great detail. Some of the things I think the administration and the Congress will consider implementing. Some of the things probably are already underway to be implemented. But I don't believe that the report, when that report calls for more troops to train Iraqi military faster, what it signified was the Iraqi military can provide security. The Iraqi police cannot provide security. So let's quit focusing on the police.
Right.
I think they've made some decisions about what we do tactically in Iraq, but I don't think that they have embraced a cut-and-run suggestion to us. Specifically as it relates to Iran and Syria and others in the region, I think that the report suggested that there has to be regional pressure. It's hard to create regional pressure with Jordan and Saudi Arabia alone. You have to be able to leverage Lebanon and Syria and Iran. Now, let me just say that out of all the threats that we have in Iraq today, Iran is a much greater threat to the world than is the instability in Iraq today. Iraq happens to be the focus of where we are and where our military presence is. But when we look long-term at the threat to the world, Iran and nuclear capabilities within Iran is a much greater threat. So it is impossible for me to believe that we will sit down with Iran and have an honest discussion about their role in a future Iraq. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Let's go to another call, and I promise we're not going to lose you, Senator. I apologize.
That's okay.
Caller, you're on the line with Senator Burr. Do you have a question for him?
Hey, Curtis, it's Ben again.
Good morning.
I've always been a great supporter of the war in Iraq because I still think this destruction over there, because Hussein's already killed, I guess, over 200,000 people with nerve gas and stuff. I just a little bit disappointed impression of Bush. He didn't send enough troops over there. Double the troops, put your might in there, tell them how strong we are, then maybe Syria and Iran will see. The United States is not kidding around, you know. They are a superpower. And you cannot sit with Syria and Iran because they're devils. Anybody wants to annihilate Israel, they've got to be kooks.
Well, caller, let him respond to that. Thank you, Senator.
Well, I think it's safe to say there are kooks in the region.
Yeah.
And, you know, Curtis, I would use as an example of the challenges that we've got. In 1967, in 5 days, the Israelis won a war against five countries.
Mm-hmm.
The same army with the same tactics and the same equipment went into Lebanon, and after 6 weeks of fighting a rogue terrorist element, Hezbollah, Israel was begging for somebody to end this because they made no progress. This is the tactical change that has happened between the traditional war and this insurgent war that we're facing in Iraq and that the Israeli army found in Lebanon. We haven't adjusted fully. We've made mistakes, calculated mistakes in Iraq. There's no question in my mind that if the world ignores the need for stability in that region, that we will pay for it in the price of petroleum by the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
We will pay for it in the future with the lives of not just Americans, but with innocent people around the world, and that this terrorist element will not leave. I served on the Intelligence Committee from 2000 to 2004. I share your caller's suggestion that Saddam Hussein probably had weapons of mass destruction. His intent was far more in line with the terrorists than it was with Western cultures. And that as we look at Ahmadinejad in Iran, we can look back at speeches that Winston Churchill and others gave about Hitler, and I think
yeah.
we will see great similarities
mm-hmm.
in the descriptions that were used, and therefore we can make great projections about what happens if we don't handle this.
Now, Senator, help me out here, because I wasn't sure yesterday. I didn't have enough time to study. Did the report call for an immediate, I mean, right now, in the short term, an increase in troops?
There was a suggestion of a plus-up of 20,000 troops specifically for the purposes of training the military, accelerating that training.
Okay.
Again, we're in a situation where it's a combination, Curtis, of training enough military that we reach critical mass, but on the other side of the coin, making sure that the Iraqi elected leadership is committed to deploy an army to handle 100% of their security.
Do you believe, Senator, that I guess two things. I want to ask you two things before we go to some other calls. Do you think that the mindset in Congress are the folks in Congress like yourself, that we truly understand that this is a historic situation as far as who these people are, what their motives are, how they fight, that they don't have a country? I know we've talked about it for the last 5 or 6 years, but has there really been a mindset? And secondly, I guess, is do you feel comfortable with this government, because, of course, that's come into question the last week, about they will and are committed to bring everybody together in a democratic structure?
Curtis, let me answer it in reverse. I can never feel comfortable about a government that al-Sadr controls three of the ministries, and his militia is prominently involved in the ethnic in the genocide that's going on between Shiites and Sunnis. So,
what was the study committee's whatever you want to call it, their position on that and what should be done?
I think that the study committee made some very specific references to militias. I'm not sure that their report went as far as calling on the Iraqi government to disarm the militias. Curtis, I don't see how you bring the level of stability that Iraq needs without totally disarming the militias and making sure that the Iraqi military has the advantage of the superior weaponry.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's why I asked the question, because I think people, I mean, everyday people are asking that question. Until you eliminate that threat, how can you move on to step two, three, and four?
Now, to your first question, I have been concerned since the day after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
How long the memory would exist for the American people and for members of Congress. The American people have far surpassed what I believed. They have been patient with a new level of security in airports. With few exceptions, they accept that and they feel comfortable with it. I am concerned with whether members of Congress will remember just what this threat is a year from now, 2 years from now.
Can we take a, let's take a few more calls if we can.
Absolutely.
Good morning. You're live on the Morning Beat with the Senator Byrd. Do you have a question? Let's go to, I'm sorry, we must have lost them. Good morning. You're live on the Morning Beat with Senator Byrd. Do you have a question?
Yes. Good morning. First of all, I'd like to appreciate the Senator coming on, because it's hard to get politicians to come on the radio and explain their position.
He's laughing.
First of all, I'm sorry?
He's chuckling in the background as you...
No, okay. Yeah, first of all, I would like to say this. I feel like this last election, America has gone backwards. And the reason I'm saying this is because we're going to have another 2 years of not trying to explore for domestic oil, because we have Senator Kennedy that doesn't want any offshore oil off of his state, but he doesn't care about anybody else's state. And our tax cuts, another 2 years that possibly we're going to lose tax cuts. I feel that, you know, that's so much important. And the politicians out there that are saying because Joe Lieberman has become an independent that he has a chance to make a big difference. I disagree, because he's going to caucus with the Democrats.
Well, let him respond to that. My main question is,
we need domestic oil research, and the Republicans were, the Domenici had said that they were going to go after this and they were going to get it. And my question is I hope that you and the Republicans and some of the Democrats, because it's going to need that to happen, is going to search for this and do this domestic oil and domestic energy for our country's best, for our future. And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay, thank you, caller.
Well, let me just say that my commitment still stands towards energy independence, towards new exploration, towards investments in technology. I believe that the time to talk about alternatives is already past. It's time to talk about replacements to oil. We can't be held hostage to the growth or the lack of growth of the Chinese economy, or to the stability or instability of the Middle East as to what energy is going to cost us, whether we're individual families or whether we're businesses. We need a predictable long-term energy policy and source, and that's probably not petroleum unless we can do the exploration that is needed domestically. I'm not banking everything on Joe Lieberman's ability to be an independent or to cross the aisle. I'm banking on the ability for the American people to put enough pressure on Congress, regardless of who's in the majority, that it gives us a foothold to get good legislation still passed. I wouldn't give up on us yet. You're going to have a lot of people for the next 2 years fighting to make sure that taxes are maintained at the same level, and that if we can drive certain taxes down, that we do, that we get solutions to problems like the energy policy and health care. Will we accomplish it all? I don't think so. But we're more likely to do it if we've got the support of more of the American people for these big initiatives. This year, for the first time, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security consumed over 50% of the federal budget. If we do nothing in 9 years, that will be 75% of the federal budget.
Wow.
All of a sudden, our options become rather small if, in fact, we're not willing to tackle some of these funding formulas.
Now, Senator, I know we've got a few minutes left, but I wanted to give you an opportunity. I know that you're very proud of the new biodefense and pandemic preparedness legislation you put through. Tell us in a nutshell what that's about and the effects that you think that will come from that, or the results that will come from that.
Well, you know, Curtis, it's always comfortable to walk into a new setting like the United States Senate and for the leadership to say, gosh, would you do this for the next 2 years? Would you create a framework for the United States that provides us the right incentive to pull academia, to pull big pharma, to pull the biotechnology world in a way that they're willing to develop the countermeasures to defeat the threats that terrorists may present in the future, and, oh, by the way, include Mother Nature in that for things like avian flu and Ebola and Marburg. Pretty daunting task.
Mm-hmm.
But we've taken 2 years to develop a framework of a public-private partnership, one that has the researchers around the country buzzing, companies around the country buzzing, gives us a new opportunity to bring new vaccines online, not just vaccines that are going to be targeted towards these threats, but I think through that research, we may find new vaccines that begin to set a framework up for eliminating cancer in mm-hmm. the country. So I think this is a great opportunity. We've matched that with a complete revamp of our public health infrastructure in this country, our ability to respond. We've learned from our response to Katrina, and we've tried to incorporate that in. And I think what you'll find is that not only have we excited the researchers, both public and private, we have excited that world of public health and first responders, because for once, for the first time, somebody's in charge of this overall thing. There'll be no finger pointing where it's going in opposite directions. We know who's in charge. And my hope is that this week, contrary to some of the news accounts, the House will pass this, the President will sign it. I might come back to Washington next week, which I don't want to do, but it would be for standing with the President and signing a piece of legislation that will make us more secure from a standpoint of threats that are intentional, accidental, or natural in the future, and it's such a great framework for us to build on.
I know we've just got about a minute or so or a little bit more left, Senator, but I did want to say, congratulations on that, because I know that took a lot of leadership. But I also wanted to remind folks that the Ryan White Care Act has also been reauthorized, and I thought you might want to make a comment on that.
Well, I was going to say that I think Ryan White Care Act is probably as important as the bioterrorism bill. Two reasons. One, we know this disease, when treated, we can stop its progression in its tracks. That's the compassionate thing for us to do. This bill attempts to change fix the flaws in the funding formula that allows money to follow a disease, money to follow a patient, versus for states to have windfalls because they used to have a big population and they don't today. Curtis, as we see the Southeast and specifically North Carolina grow with retirees, both civil and military, as we see more people move to North Carolina for employment, as we see our population grow, we've got to make sure that the funding formulas follow the people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first step in a very long process of those funding formulas being changed to reflect this demographic shift in America. And I can tell you that North Carolina will be able to treat, because we will pass Ryan White, more HIV-infected and AIDS patients than we ever have, and this is a great opportunity.
Well, we want to thank you, Senator Burr from Washington. Thank you for coming on. I know the holiday season's busy for you. Thanks for helping us on that legislation and working hard on that. But, you know, I hope, and I know your office does. I want people to know that your office sends us information all the time. We try to get out to folks, and we appreciate that. And continue to do that as we go forward now on this plan and what is implemented from the Iraqi plan. I hope you'll keep us up to date on what you think's important that we need to know about it.
Curtis, we will, and a happy holiday to all your listeners. I look forward to the next opportunity to be on.
Thank you, sir, and you be safe this holiday season.
Thank you.
This is The Morning Beat. You're live on the Big Talker FM. We'll be right back. Stay with us.